Hey, Ed, it's somehow that time of the week already that we're back to talk about more old Man United games.
Yes, it is now 2025 and we've done 4,000 of these old Man United games.
I was thinking, like, it's not even time yet to start thinking, are we nearly there yet? Because we're not nearly there yet, so it's like, you just got to, we're still in the middle of it, and that's just about okay with me.
Yeah, although developments this week in that it seems like, at least from the covert briefing from the Premier League, the government is basically close to giving the go-ahead. I have to say, the cynical radar is up. That this is a nice feel-good story, less about public health and more about people forgetting about the horrendous number of deaths in the UK and talking about the football instead. You know, why not argue about a red card or a referee or something other than what's really happening
well,
in the world?
And then
the Premier League floating same trial balloons that they have been for a while now, which is how they're going to execute on
it. And there's the cynical take on getting football back as a distraction. And then there's the slightly less cynical take, kind of need football back as a distraction, because...
Well, true as well, yes. And I think both things can be true. Yeah, I mean, it would be good for public spirit.
Absolutely.
You know, having football back. I mean, look, there's lots and lots of questions about whether the players would feel safe, how to stop crowds gathering, how to keep the something like 300 people that need to be at each game just to make it function, from players, support staff, coaches, media, press, broadcast and so on, as well as the health workers need to be there for various reasons, and all the testing kits that would need to be administered to the players multiple times a week in order to allow it to happen.
Which is okay.
Lots of questions.
In the Bundesliga. Because you're not allowed to talk about politics when you talk about the lack of testing kits. And no politics, only clapping. The other thing that I saw that's football related, nothing to do with coronavirus stuff, a really nice thing where Ralf Hasenhüttl said that the one good thing that came out of the 9-0 loss that Southampton suffered was that Fergie had sent them a text, and multiple people saying he sent them a text with the cheat codes because they went on an amazing run after that. But just absolutely classic Ferg, isn't it? Just being nice to managers in difficult times. And I really liked it because Hasenhüttl isn't a British manager. There's something I liked even more about it. He's an equal opportunities manager supporter.
Yes, I mean, he was volume texting Sam Allardyce normally, wasn't he? So... Don't worry, Big Sam. Don't worry, Big Sam. But yeah, I know. Nice story that one was. You do wonder how he gets the number. What did he call up the Southampton switch desk and go, "I'm Fergie, give us the number"?
Presumably, it's not that many steps removed between Fergie, someone with that Fergie's got their number and Ralf Hasenhüttl's number. A briefing came out that he's in real good spirits and doing well, which was just nice to hear. So we await the Manchester United's podcast Zoom chat with Alex Ferguson.
Yeah. Do you see Fergie on a Zoom chat?
I can. And just like you can only see like the top part of his head because he's got the camera in the wrong place and stuff like that. It'd be great.
Great.
All right. So if you've not listened to the show before, we normally talk about what's happening with United at the moment. But at the moment we're doing this thing called Game Club where... You are allowed to talk about Game Club. In fact, it's the first rule of Great Game Club, where we go through old games and discuss them in some detail. We've often done sort of minute by minute things, but we try to get some analysis in there so it's not just a breakdown of what happens in the game. What are we talking about this week, Ed?
We are talking about the 1968 European Cup final, Manchester United's first European trophy. In fact, I think this is the first final or trophy of any kind we've talked about in Game Club. We've done 10 of these, and they're all rando games, different league games and semifinals and stuff like that. Yeah, interesting games. But this was interesting too, and I hadn't seen this game for a number of years. I've watched it previously, obviously, because you have to.
And because you have to if you're a massive Man United nerd. Is that what you're saying, Ed?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, used to sleep with a DVD or more like the VHS.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The 8mm.
By the time DVDs were invented, you should have grown out of that, probably, just about. But yeah, I remember you having the VHS. I'm sure this was one of the many presents that you were given by relatives who were like, oh, it's Ed's birthday or Christmas. He likes Man United. Let's get him Man United stuff.
Exactly that happened for a good decade, that did.
Yeah, I'm sure many, many of our listeners can relate to that experience. And in the end, it's not so bad because you do like Man United. And if they get the right Man United stuff, it turns out nice. And I quite enjoyed going back to this game.
Yeah.
Mostly, I have to say, the thing I enjoyed about it most by a country mile was the fact that the whole rest of my day, this is what was going on in my head. Oh, I say, that was excellent. Oh, turns out, actually, Ken Walthamstow is quite a terrible commentator.
Yes, really bad.
And at Wembley, later on that glorious day, the cup they wanted was the European Cup. 100,000 expectant fans packed the stands to see great football. Bobby Charlton and Coluna exchanged Manchester United and Benfica. The moment of truth in the battle for mastery of European soccer had arrived.
Yeah, it was quite opinionated as well, actually, and kind of judgmental and very sneery about certain aspects of Johnny Foreigner's game.
Yeah. Oh, well, he seems to have passed it short again. Well, what does he want to do that for? Give it a wallop, sir. That's the way the Brits do it. And can't you see, we won 1967 and 66 World Cup, and now we're winning this. His voice is just beautiful to listen to. I find it very soothing to listen to Ken Walthamstow commentary. It's weird how the co-commentator, you mentioned his name, I can't remember what you said it was, he interjects twice a half, maybe, with a sentence that appears to have been cut in at a different time. We watched the version of this that's on Footballia. It cuts out every moment of non-action, which I wonder whether it was to fit it onto a VHS. I wonder whether that's why they did that.
Might be. Wally Barnes, I think, was the co-commentator.
Right, he, yeah.
Yeah, was a footballer and commentated in World Cups alongside Walthamstow. Very odd, co-coms. Maybe we should send Gary Neville a copy of this and say, hey, copy that. I mean, he speaks, what, 10 times in the whole game, if that?
Yeah, genuinely, if that. I would say it's 6, maybe. It's very, very rare that he chips in. And he doesn't have to, because Walthamstow, whose name we've pronounced multiple different ways and will continue to as the Ken, let's just call him Ken.
K-dubs.
So for those of you who maybe haven't grown up, who are maybe not old and don't know who he is the man who said, some people are on the pitch, they think it's all over. It is now, it's 4, which was his most glorious moment. Turns out that was a fluke, absolute fluke.
Well, he got very excited when near the end of this game in extra time, one random guy ran onto the pitch and evaded a couple of stewards.
He's like, oh, I know what I say. Oh, there's some people on the pitch. Oh, they shouldn't be. Jolly shouldn't be. So obviously had the telling off from last time. All right, so
let's rewind back to the beginning. This is Manchester United's, obviously, first European Cup win. But this takes place in a really interesting time because it's 4 days after they've lost the league title to Manchester City. So they were in the running, leading the first division, managed to lose 2 of the last 3 games, and so lost the title by 2 points to City. And apparently it was a crushing disappointment, as it would be. They were champions in 67, but not in 68, which would have been, you know, double glory. But they just missed out on it. In fact, if it says anything about the competitiveness of the first division in that year, United and City both lost 10 times each.
Well, you see,
in a 42-game season.
Some of these continentals don't have the competition they have in British football, so maybe that's why it's more difficult for them, literally.
Yes,
almost verbatim.
And that was an exact quote.
Yeah. All right, so I didn't recognise many names from the Benfica team, and actually, there's definitely names in the United team that I would have heard at some point but had kind of forgotten about. John Aston, who is man of the match in this game, playing on the left wing. is someone whose name I did not remember at all. And the fact that, like you mentioned before we started recording, he's at Luton Town within 18 months of this game being played is possibly why he's not massively remembered. But he plays a blinder in this game, and his dad was in the coaching staff.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so it's basically a 4-3-3, sort of, with Brennan Dunn, the Irish fullbacks, and Bill Fuchs and Sadler at the back, sort of, although Sadler basically plays him in field.
So. Yeah, he's not. He just doesn't play in defence. It shows on the graphics that he's playing in defence because they're sort of assuming that he's going to go and help Fuchs deal with the threat provided by Torres, the big lad who gets a lot of build-up. And eventually does actually finally get a knockdown to Eusebio for Benfica's goal.
But that
goal.
Was about it. Yeah, he's yeah. a rubbish big lad.
He's not particularly.
He's a rubbish
really
big lad in a team that doesn't pass the ball more than 5 yards. Very, yeah. Very slowly.
But yeah, Sadler's playing beyond box to box. I mean, he's playing centre forward at some points, and he wears the number 10 shirt. So yeah, we really play with three at the back, one centre-back and two full-backs, really.
Yeah, basically, and the full-backs are not static by any means. And there's Stiles and Charlton, I guess Sadler through the middle, Ashton and Best out wide, although Best roams a lot, and Brian Kidd through the middle because Dennis Lloyd had a knee operation a few days beforehand and managed to watch the game from the hospital.
Paddy Querrand, of course.
Paddy Querrand, of course, in midfield as well. Yes, very, very, quite ponderous Querrand, but yeah.
You know. Hey, good on the ball,
good on the ball. And he is good on the ball.
Beloved by Ken Wolfenstone. Did you notice that? Really,
yes.
Like, fully, he loves Pat Querrand.
Yes, could have done with emotional... some Querrand co-coms as well.
What an emotional day it must be for him. His former team winning last year, and now his current team winning this year. But yeah, I feel like... I'm sure it was an emotional day for Pat Querrand, but there's probably people in that team for whom it's a more emotional day again, for reasons.
For anyway, reasons,
this is,
yeah.
That's the other key context of this game, of course, which is that this is the first time, this is 10 years from Munich. So the fact that Matt Busby has got a team to the European Cup final 10 years, which is not a long time, after his whole team's been wiped out, basically, or the vast majority of his team's been wiped out, it's an incredible achievement. And you know, Charlton just collapses at the end of it, doesn't he? He's just completely emotionally devastated.
Well, that's right. I mean, Jackie Charlton said famously that the air disaster was when Bobby stopped smiling. He does smile after this game. I mean, he is happy, but he's famously a... not, you know, not a jovial man, very introverted as well. But yes, it all comes out after United win. And the players looked absolutely knackered. Not the levels of fitness you might seem today.
But they also do put in a mega shift, don't they? Just don't stop until right in the end of the second half of extra time, really. So United get to the final by beating Hibernians in the first leg. It doesn't look like it's Hibs.
No, it's from Malta.
Ah, yeah, the Maltese Hibernians. Oh, yes. The top quality opposition from the Continentals. Then Sarajevo. Do they still exist? Football Club Sarajevo. Yeah, apparently they do. Gornik Zabrze, as you can hear, and not a club that I'm particularly familiar
with. From Poland.
And then Real Madrid. So, yeah, substantially more difficult opponents right at the death there. And in fact, Benfica's route is similarly non-taxing. Glentoran, Saint-Étienne, Vassas. When I say non-taxing, they might have been really difficult teams to beat at the time. And then they played Juventus, but just not like a litany of very famous European clubs defeated on the way to this final. But tricky.
But it's like the draw Manchester City gets most years, doesn't it?
Does it? Haven't they had really difficult draws? Isn't the whole thing that they've had spectacularly unfairly difficult draws from the
not
beginning?
Not the FA Cup, though. They're playing Hibernians of Malta every week.
Yeah, okay. When the game kicks off, I'd say United are on top early by a considerable margin.
And, for sure.
Really, they're kind of on top for most of the game, aren't they? They look the better side.
Especially the first half. First hour, yeah. I mean, they're the more dynamic side throughout. So very, you know, obviously deep contrast in styles. United are definitely not a long ball side, but they mix it up. They're prepared to play on the break or play reasonably direct, or at least quickly into the wings, especially into the wings. And they move the ball a lot quicker. Benfica, very, very slow in their build-up, short passes, ball retention, but pretty static, I would say. I mean, Wolstenholme is extremely dismissive of their style throughout. And Chumley Warner in the co-coms bordering on the jingoistic with his few comments about it. But they just don't do much, do they, Benfica, until like the last 20 minutes of the game.
And their one shining moment early on is just Eusebio with an incredible shot after a brilliant dribble out of nothing. And he looks an absolute cut above. There's Wolstenholme.
Well, he's a man who scored like 750 goals in about them as many games.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe some people don't really know who Eusebio. I'm sure most people listening know exactly who Eusebio is, but he was the top scorer at the 1966 World Cup finals. An absolutely superb Mozambique-born striker with a kind of fascinating story who became an absolute icon of Portuguese football. And the other player that I was really impressed with was Coluna, who played in the centre of the park. He was their captain.
Yes, who every time he got the ball was praised for still moving. As if he was like 50 something. He's only 32 in this game, but apparently that is well over the hill for footballers in 1968.
He played a lot of games, to be fair, and he was captain of Portugal for a long time, another Mozambique-born player and someone I'd never heard of. I mean, I must have heard of him, but there was no Wikipedia to look him up when I was watching this game as a kid, but it was really interesting to read a little bit about him.
Great story of Eusebio when I was reading up on him for this podcast. He joined Benfica, but Sporting had ties to his original club and thought they were going to get him, and so angered were they, and so angered were their fans that Benfica had to hide him away in a random village for 2 weeks to make sure he was safe.
Wow. That's pretty intense, isn't it? I mean, you could see why. There's a lovely quote from Ken Wolfenstone where he says, "A lady came up to me and said that she was looking forward to seeing Eusebio play and very sad he wasn't a Manchester United player." He was very popular. And he does get thoroughly booed at one point after being clattered by Nobby Styles. And Styles is like, "Oh, I never touched him, ref. He keeps falling over for no reason, apart from me kicking him in the shins." You know.
Yes, there's some choice tackles in this. Best gets it as well.
Very much so.
Best, who had his socks rolled down and no shin pads.
Well, you see, if these players will play with no shin pads, they'll get a whack on the shins. The key matchup in the game tactically is just the absolute mismatch between John Aston on United's left and Adolfo, the right back, who gets skinned. Like, honestly, if there were memes from this game, they would all just be about, oh, like, who does Adolfo see in his nightmares? John Aston. Like, oh, he's not only been sent out to the shops, he's been sent out, called back, sent out again. Just every time Aston gets the ball,
right,
he knocks it past Adolfo and has a running race with him. And at no point does anyone think on the Benfica side, perhaps we should double up on this lad.
Yeah, well, it takes a while before sort of Torres and Grasser are trying to come back and help him out, doesn't it? But yeah, it absolutely murders him. I mean, you'd sub him at halftime if they had subs in those days, which they did not, except for a single substitute goalkeeper. But yes, he gets completely obliterated. And one of the really strange things about this is Aston's performance is outstanding, and he's the kind of standout player, even if Best and Charlton and Kidd score the goals. But within 18 months, his career's in the toilet. He broke his leg at the beginning of the next season and basically never recovered from it. But he looks a really brilliant player, and it's kind of fascinating that, I mean, I guess with modern medicine, maybe that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, because you can imagine, you reset his leg. I mean, his end product was pretty good. Like, he was consistently delivering I think it's, is it his cross to Charlton for the first goal? It might not be, actually. But, oh, it's Sadler, I think, Walsingham says, dinks the ball in. But he's consistently, like, putting in decent balls. He's not just speed. But if you took speed away from him then, and those fullbacks that catch him up would then murder his legs time after time, you can see why a leg break would be a career ender for a player like that. And that's, it's a really sad story. And I'm sure football is absolutely littered. I mean, it still is. We know it still is, but it must even be more littered with players that could have been, you know, something quite remarkable. But
that's right. And on the other side of the pitch, Best, he's in the action early. His first two pieces of action, he tries to dribble around six players, loses the ball, and then, like, really clumsily misplaces a pass. And in fact, I mean, it takes him a while to get into this game. A lot of very, very one-eyed, selfish play when instead of, like, passing after he's beaten the third man, he tries to beat the fourth man.
He has a stinker in this game. It's remembered because he takes the ball past the keeper for United's third, is it? It's not the one that puts us in the head. Maybe it is. I can't remember. We'll get there.
He scores 2 minutes into extra time.
So that is the one that puts... So it's a massively important goal.
Yeah.
And he does take it pretty well. But, you know, it's really notable that the crowd is like, gets very, very good in the second half. But in the first half, the crowd's quite sort of nervy sounding. The first big roar is when George Best gets the ball for the first time. So it's very clear these United fans really are turning up week in, week out to watch Georgie. But if...
Well, 28 goals in that club season.
I wonder how many shots that came from, because, oh my God, he is...
You saying he's got low XG?
Possibly not, but the level of selfishness, the one, I think it's in the second half, I think it's at 1-1, where Crerand is like tearing past him on the right and he just runs into trouble when he's got a ball left and a ball right. If he was nowadays, he would have been hammered for decision-making. I mean, I know he's absolutely beloved of players of a certain age, and you can see why, because he is a sort of electrically exciting player to watch. But at least as frustrating as he is exciting in this particular game.
He is. But look, in that first half, he's a factor. I mean, it's definitely Aston who's the real factor. Fullback, I mean, Tony Dunn supporting him from left back. Charlton, the metronome in midfield, isn't he? It's, you know, he just controls that midfield. And Fuchs trying to cope with Eusebio, who's, you know, as you said, a cut above anyone else in that Benfica side and just looks dangerous every time he gets it. I mean, especially from free kicks where he's having shots all the time.
Yeah. It gets really tetchy really early, this game. There's a lot of handbags. And at one point, like, there's a pretty mild foul on George Best and he refuses to shake the hand of the player who comes over to him. And there's really no sportsman. I mean, it's very remembered for one moment of real sportsmanship, this game. But that is the exception rather than the rule of the tone in which the game's played. It is quite fighty. There's a lot of melees and scrums happening.
Quite a few. There's no goals during the first half.
Bad Sadler miss.
The closest. Sadler miss is really close from inches. I mean, he just dives at it, doesn't quite get it. It's sort of Gascoigne in 96-esque, isn't it? And Eusebio hits the bar with a shot, which Stepney is nowhere near. I'm a bit lazy, to be honest. So he could at least go for it.
I think he was probably just surprised. I'd say that's like the highest quality piece of play in the entire game, apart from maybe Charlton's the header that he scores the first goal with. That's really, really exceptional. But like, I'd say that Eusebio shot does look like it would. That looks not at all out of place in a modern game, which a lot of this game would look pretty basic in a modern context.
50 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Best absolutely buzzing after. So half time comes. Sadler's a one on one, by the way, a really bad miss from a one on one as well. And then after half time, United just are out of the blocks, flying out of the traps, all over Benfica. they win the ball back quickly every time they lose it, and almost every attack looks sort of threatening. And Charlton scores a really nice goal with a lovely ball from Sadler, who has a good game generally, I think Sadler did.
That's right. And it's a classic Bobby Charlton moment, you think of. Glancing header, 9 foot in the air, brilliant leap. I mean, the man is 30 during this game, but looks 80. I mean, he hasn't aged a day since then. He wasn't any younger then than he is now. He's exactly the same. Maybe three strands of hair going over his head.
He definitely looked identical then to when we were first aware of him, like when he was in Bobby Charlton soccer school ads. That's the same person, basically. He's started to age a little bit in the last 20 years, possibly. But it comes from the left, where Benfica is just in all sorts of bother on their right. I mean, Adolfo's probably just in the corner crying when there's another player for him to deal with on top of Aston and Sadler Dinks in the ball. And it's a beautiful header. And then Best scores and goes absolutely mad, but he's offside. I've just written a note that just says mad selfish from Georgie. Just a few moments after that. Maybe he's just upset that he was offside for that goal. And so he's like really trying too hard to make up for it.
But there are so many moments like that. There's one in the second half. I mean, it's in extra time when he's in a good position, shoots. And there's sort of three players in the United box. I think it's Sadler who just kind of falls on the floor, like, throws his hand around, does a bit of Cristiano and like chucks his arms up in the air as Best like dribbles past two and then shoots from an impossible angle when there's good players in good positions.
Yeah, that bit of skill is absolutely amazing, by the way. Like I'm not surprised he shot after that because it would have felt so good. And ball comes out to Kidd and a pretty good save. Made slightly scuffed finish from Kiddo, but a good save. Then the United fans 1-0 up in a European Cup final, chanting attack, attack, attack. It's like Louis. No wonder Louis van Gaal was getting it at 0-0 against Crystal Palace, you know.
Yes, and Wilson Home is not happy about this one. Suggests that Matt Busby may know what he's doing.
These plebeians should keep their opinions to themselves. He is then later full of praise for the crowd. He's very excited every time the crowd sing a song, he refers to it.
Yes, bringing out the whole playbook, didn't they? Yeah, I mean, it's a great United crowd, especially in the second half. The atmosphere is really rocking. And I have to say, I watched this, it's in black and white, but then I went and watched a Pathé News reel on this one as well, which is in beautiful colour with different angles, very different angles, which is really nice. And you get a real sense of the crowd as well. So, you know, in black and white, it's hard to kind of, although the goals look beautiful, the crowd doesn't really come alive. And it does in the old Pathé reels, which is great.
Because it's just red everywhere, presumably.
It's red everywhere and the bouncing up and down.
Fantastic. So then, finally, a knockdown from the big lad finally works. And they dink one up to Torres, which...
Basic football, this is. They finally ditched that Johnny Foreigner football and thought, we're going to launch it.
Wolstenholme says right at the beginning of the game, they'll be looking for Torres to knock the ball down for Eusebio. And he finally does it. And it comes out to, is it Grasser that scores the goal?
Grasser scores the goal, yeah.
But yeah, it's a decent bit of play. Not much United could have done about it. And it's not exactly against the run of play, but it's definitely, Benfica will definitely count themselves lucky to be 1-1 at full time. I don't know what the XG would be, but United, it's United's game.
Quite a lot to United, I'd say. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, really on top, most of the possession, probably. Although it's just such a contrast in styles with Benfica, as slow as you can possibly get. I mean, if you hated Louis van Gaal, you'd hate this Benfica side. Yeah.
We hope you're enjoying the No Question About That podcast. We are open for sponsorship, so if you run the kind of business that would be interested in sponsoring our show, just drop us an email at nqatpod@gmail.com. It nearly, though, goes completely the other way. Talk about XG, a fairly high XG chance, I'm sure, from Eusebio. And this is one of the most famous moments, I guess, of...
Minutes before the end.
So, yeah. Eusebio one-on-one, brilliant chance, had been the best player on Benfica's side by a mile, absolutely scuffs it. Terrible finish, straight at Stepney. Like, Stepney says it came straight at me, and Matt Busby said afterwards it was a fantastic save. I read a thing saying that, like, he humbly said it came straight at him. Just watch that game. It wasn't big. It was just literally terrible shot. And then Eusebio kind of makes a big show of applauding. Oh, wonderful save, wonderful save. And everyone's going, oh, this is great sportsmanship. Like, no, he's trying to make everyone think it was a good save, and he didn't blow the chance.
Stepney was a wonder goalkeeper to stop that rocket from the big cannon boot of Eusebio, and the great Portuguese star sportingly acknowledged it. But that wasn't it. 90 minutes up and still deadlocked. The teams were weary, but the fans went. With an extra 30 minutes of play ahead, bumps, bruises and tired muscles ached like they'd never ached before. But a wet sponge and a magic massage worked miracles.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I suppose if he, you know, a different reaction could have been looking at the turf, you know, for the divot, the bobble. But yes, he's blowing smoke up our asses at that one, yeah. Straight at him.
Sweet though.
But you
sweet
know, though. Two saves really right at the end that Stepney has to make. And Benfica wouldn't have deserved the win, but they created those two chances right at the end. But instead it's into extra time. Nerves for
who's
2 minutes.
Whose fitness will hold up the longest? Manchester United's most assuredly. Oh, there's one moment where the co-commentator, by the way, calls Benfica Portugal.
Yes.
It's like, well, the thing about Portugal is that's not, they're not playing against Portugal. Anyway, Stepney launches it from with the ball in his hands. Very nice flick on from, I think, Sadler.
It's Kidd, I think.
Is
it's
it?
Kidd.
Right.
Yeah.
It's someone with two numbers on their back. Yeah. That was what I saw. And then Georgie absolutely skins the keeper. There's one little moment there. It looks like he slightly overhit it, but balls are heavier in those days, so it just stops and he does well.
Interesting in the build-up to that. So first Stepney rolls it out to Brennan, who just rolls it straight back to him. Then he rolls it out to Dunn, who rolls it straight back to him. Obviously shattered. They're like, we don't want the ball. So then he launches it. It's just a big punt upfield. And a brilliant finish by Best, who afterwards said what I really wanted to do, a very famous quote from Best was take it around the keeper, stop it on the line and head it in. But I had second thoughts because they were coming at me too fast.
Yeah, and honestly, the way he played this game, I'm not surprised that's what was popping into his head. Because, but no, lovely. And he had worked really hard. Whether he had worked really hard in the service of the team is another question. But I think Bobby Charlton would say that that wasn't necessarily Georgie's way. And they put up with him because he was absolutely brilliant. And he was, for the time, absolutely brilliant. I mean, this is not his best game by any stretch of the imagination, but he tries things and does things that nobody else tries or does in this game.
Great, yeah. And then 2 minutes later, game's dead, basically. And
hey, guess how Aston wins the corner? He absolutely skins Adolfo, ladies and gentlemen. Poor old Adolfo.
I wanted to have a second look at that corner, though, because I'm not sure it didn't come off Aston's shins.
Possibly. But yeah, Adolfo looked exhausted 7 minutes into this game. In the 99th minute or whatever, he's really wiped out, and Aston just knocks the ball past him, runs past it, round him on the outside, and then gets the corner.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Aston, he is brilliant in this game, but it's pretty basic, right? His one trick is go wide and go fast. But it works. He's very successful.
It's mad how often it works. You think at some point, shouldn't Adolfo just play a deeper line, mate? Because this high line business it's like John Terry playing a high line under AWB. It's not a good look. I can't see who takes the corner. Presumably it's Bobby Charlton that takes the corner.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell, isn't it? Yeah, it's sort of the single camera setup, except for their one roving camera, or whatever Wolstenholme calls it, which occasionally shows a sort of semi-slow-mo replay, which is slightly awkwardly cut to. But yeah, basically one fixed camera doesn't peer into the darkness of the corner very well.
And Wolstenholme doesn't think to mention who either put the ball in or heads the ball towards goal for Kidd to latch onto. So I think it's Sadler that has the header.
Right. I slowed it down a few times. Couldn't work it out.
Yeah. Then Kidd heads the ball, bounces back out to him, and he heads it in. And it's his 19th birthday. Brian Kidd's 19th. A pretty good 19th birthday, scoring a European Cup final.
Pretty
on the crowd. The crowd shortly afterwards sing an authentic
happy birthday.
Start to finish, happy birthday to Brian. happy birthday, dear Brian.
The splitter. Still at City, isn't he, as a coach? Oof. What went wrong? As the bellboy famously said to George Best when he was... when was that? It was after... It was he was caught with... Oh, it was he was in Vegas, wasn't it, in his later career, and he was caught in Vegas with piles of money that he'd won at the tables in a hotel bed with one of the Miss Worlds or universes. The bellboy said to him, George, where did it all go wrong for you?
Yeah. There's another goal. Oh, Best puts in a tackle in the box late on. Like, kind of amazing. And then United, Wolf of Home says the United fans are out-singing and out-shouting the England fans from the World Cup final. Two right they were.
United bigger than England, always.
Yeah, absolutely. Even in the mid-60s and late-60s. When the Reds go marching in gets sung, and Wolf says, all the English clubs sing this song when the Saints go marching in. It's like he's really entertained by the crowd singing. There's another one that he refers to as well. It's all very jolly. And United fans at this point know the game's won, really, and they're just having a sing-song and a celebrate.
They are, but there's another goal to come, and perhaps, yeah, maybe even the best of the night. For just a stunning finish from Charlton from an angle, just kind of, I don't know how to describe the finish, really. He gets a tremendous whip on the ball as he's trying to finish it and gets a really good angle for the finish high into the net. It's really nice. Again, classic Bobby Charlton moment.
Yeah, it's not unlike the Rooney goal that we talked about in his debut, where he cuts it back across himself, except it's a sort of cleaner strike, isn't it?
Yeah, much cleaner strike, yeah.
But fantastic. And a lovely ball from Brian Kidd, I think.
Yeah.
That provides getting an assist as well as a goal on his birthday.
And then Walsham Home has one final moment of magic where he says, the referee Concetto should be called Concerto because we'd like him to blow the whistle.
Yeah. It's lovely. Honestly, he seems like a jingoistic but decent chap, Ken.
Well, you know, for most football coverage, that was the general tone. It's only really in the last sort of 10 years that it takes a more neutral stance for Champions League coverage. You know, so.
Well, yeah, we saw that 91 Cup final and they were just openly supporting United. I would say in this game, if anything, they slightly less openly support United. I mean, they are, but not quite to the same extreme. And then the second half, really, in the he says, Benfica will be looking to put on an exhibition here, knowing they're beaten. And they sort of try a few bits and pieces. Eusebio has another crack. But the game sort of peters out. And United are European champions. Really, just an incredible achievement. Just an absolutely, you know, mind-boggling level of achievement. The fact that Matt Busby built the team that he built originally, that was maybe not going to be European champions, but, you know, could well have been. They were certainly all conquering here. To build another side of that quality. And then this is where it peaks, isn't it? It starts to kind of begin the slide from this point.
And
really.
And very quickly, yeah. So within what, 3 years, Busby is out and McGuinness is in disastrously, of course. But yeah, Charlton's on the slide from this moment. Many of the players from this team leave and they're off. Obviously Law's back into the team, but he reaches his peak by the early 70s as well. So, the final, so almost a bookend on Busby's, you know, fantastic career as a United manager.
Yeah, and, you know, the man who built the modern club. You know, there's a reason that there's two statues at Old Trafford of managers. The best Lauren Charlton one is really interesting in historic. We sort of take it for granted that that's that it's right and proper that that statue should be there. And I'm certainly not saying it's not. But it's kind of interesting, isn't it? When you now look at the whole history of United, they're obviously like incredibly important players. But actually, the modern history of the of United has even superseded some of their achievements. And none of that's been yet put into bronze outside. And it's going to be really interesting. Is there going to be a Neville, Scholes and Giggs statue? And then when there's a statue made, everyone else sort of slightly gets written out of existence. Nobby Stiles is written out of existence because that statue exists. And John Aston certainly is, like, you know. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because really, they, apart from, I mean, they were all incredibly impactful in United's first kind of televised great era or recorded great era. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Yeah, Neville might have to make friends with the club again after sticking a hotel in the car park, much against the club's wishes. So, yeah, I mean,
if you're not going to give us a statue, we're going to literally put this hotel in the forecourt.
Yeah, so you have to look at it all the time. Busby won 5 First Division titles. I mean, it probably would have been many more, of course. So 3 of those came before the Munich air disaster, and then 65 and 67... there were other titles, won the FA Cup in 63, which we may look back on at one stage, and in 48 before the sort of Babes era. And you just wonder what he might have built. So reached the semi-finals of the European Cup with the Babes side, never got to see that team come to fruition, and took an awful lot of rebuilding to get back to United of the early or the mid to late 60s.
It's just that, I know I talked about this the other day when we talked about the Busby documentary. Well, the other day, it was months ago, but you know, it all blends into one nowadays. But just the human achievement, it just beggars belief, the capacity to come back from a trauma like that and probably never do any kind of meaningful emotional processing other than just existing, you know, and other than the odd moment or whatever, certainly never really being able to reckon with it with the kind of insight that you could potentially have access to now. You know, culturally speaking, it would be very unlikely that he would have talked about his feelings in a meaningful way. Just put the pieces back together, forced the pieces back together, somehow managed with force of will to do it. It's unbelievable. And no wonder they all collapsed in a heap after they won the European Cup, you know. It's pretty massive.
Well, that's right, yeah. And I'm sure, football is a team sport and players are, it's their second family. I mean, it's been interesting listening to some of the reaction from players during this break, because a lot of them are having sort of emotional responses, which are, I'm not with my family. And it's definitely true of players who are from overseas and perhaps don't have their family with them, but, you know, also of local. And Charlton lost 8 of his, so, you know, and he was never the same again, apparently.
No. I mean, you can see it, can't you? But they did this thing together, Busby and Charlton, and, you know, lots of other people too, but they did this thing together to honour the people that had, gone in the most sort of spectacular way. It's pretty incredible. And Charlton was brilliant in the final too. Like, no, I mean, I guess probably useful that he's like, oh, 2 years ago, I literally won the World Cup here. Him and Stiles in the centre of the park, just being like, yeah, this is this old hat. We're just a few short shakes removed from winning the World Cup together here. So
sticking it to the Continentals, as Wally Barnes calls them. After he's called them Portugal.
Yes. So very enjoyable to look back on football in black and white. We'll do something more futuristic next, shall we, Ed?
We shall. What shall we do?
Sorry, Tom. Damn it. This is the first time for ages we've had a sorry, Tom. Been on such a good run. I have no idea what we're going to do. Right, so 43 minutes.
Pick final.
There's a big sorry. What, sorry? Oh, you said we'd not done a final. We literally did the Cup Winners' Cup final.
We did, yeah.
I just remembered that. Right, what are we going to do next?
Could do the 2008 final. Moscow.
Yeah.
The rain.
So we should spread out the European Cup finals,
I'd say.
Maybe
we should, yeah. We could do all the good games. We could
do the 77 FA Cup final.
Oh, yeah, why not? Against the Scouse, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's sort of contextually interesting. It's 9 years later after this game. So anyway. Okay. So next up, we're going to do the 1970. We're going to stick with olden days. And year I was born, the 1977 FA Cup final.
So old. So yeah. Old.
Oh, sorry, Ed, what year were you born?
Was it even in colour then?
Yeah, were we born in colour? That's the question. Yeah. So 1977 FA Cup final. Be interesting, because that's literally only 9 years after this game, but a world apart in terms of everything that's happened at United.
Yeah, in 9 years, the club has gone from European champions, to that team falling apart, a failure of a manager, two failures of managers.
Relegation.
And sort of rebirth. I suppose at least these days we haven't been relegated.
No, yes. Quite. We've kind of effectively just been relegated from the Champions League to the Europa League. That's the kind of contemporary
relegation. It's the worst kind of relegation. It's worse. It's worse. I'd rather play in the Championship.
Yeah. So yeah, it'd be fun to do that. I've never seen that game in full, I don't think, unless you had it on VHS. Did you have that on VHS? I don't
remember. Certainly
I've seen
familiar
the
with the goals. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that might be all I've seen. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. All right, so patron backers, stay tuned, because what we're going to do now is we're going to go through the side and sort of see the 1968 European Cup winning side and sort of see where their journey took them
after
that game. So everyone else, we'll see you on Monday. And in the meantime, take really good care of yourselves.
See you then. Bye now.
No fish for that.